please help me welcome our speaker tonight, who is Jerry F. from Wilkes-Barre, PA.
Evening, everyone. I'm Jerry. I'm a recovered alcoholic and addict. By the grace of God, we're all here tonight. The grace of God for me is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the undeserved favor of God. Because if I got what I deserved, I wouldn't be here. One thing about the grace of God, I can tell you, it doesn't come by a book, by looks, or by the money you got in the bank, or by your charm or your personality. We're all given an even shot. Depends on what you do with that grace. April 2nd, 2007, I decided to do something with that grace. I decided to follow the people that came before me and try to help the others that came after me. I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. When tempted by alcohol and drugs, I recoil like a hot flame. The problem has been removed. Well, how'd that happen? Trust God, clean house, and help others. It's the oldest prescription in the book. I was running around here 11 months sober, going to a bunch of meetings, completely out of my mind. Some guys came up to me and said to me, "What step are you working?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "You're in the largest 12-step spiritual program in the world and you're not working a step. It's like boxing gloves without hands." So they took me through those steps in 3 days. I had a spiritual awakening. And I'm still here by the maintenance of my spiritual condition, by trusting God and helping others. Bill talks about that real. We seek our solution on a spiritual as well as the altruistic plane, unselfish concern for the welfare of others. I got to a loving God in that second step, in the second tradition. He'd have to be loving for me. I came to Pennsylvania via the Department of Corrections, 1983. Before we get there, my first drink was in 1968. My first shot of dope was in 1970. Drugs are in my story. It's my experience. I don't feel so I got to apologize for it. Took me 40 years to get here, but I'm blessed today because of it. The people pointed to the path, and I had no other choice but to follow it. And I'm very content today. I was born in New York, in the south side of Buffalo. I come from a family of 9 kids, 4 brothers and 4 sisters. My father was a police officer. His father was a police officer. My mother's side of the family were firemen. So I have policemen, firemen. I don't like authority. I don't even like the mailman's uniform. My father worked 2 jobs his whole life. And, you know, I played all these little league games, and he only came to one. And I had a big resentment until I got to AA, when I finally realized my father was working those 2 jobs to put food on the table. It wasn't about me. It was about all 9 of us. So, I can't tell you that. I can tell you this. My mother died of alcoholism and cancer. And if she would have been stronger, she's only 53. 6 years younger than me when she passed. If she wasn't such an alcoholic, she would have made it through that operation. She never woke up. But I grew up in an Irish-Italian neighborhood. I had a good neighborhood, played a lot of sports, went to Catholic schools. I don't blame God for anything in my life. I blame Jerry. I hung out with some guys, man. In 1968, when I took that first drink of Wild Irish Rose, in 2 hours, I was throwing my guts up, and the world was spinning, and I said I'd never do it again. The next night, I was doing it again, because it got me out of here, got me out of reality, changed my perception on everything. 1970, I can still remember sitting at a kitchen table with 4 older guys, and they told me, "Don't do that. It's going to ruin your life." So I'm with you guys, and I did it, and the allergy kicked in 1970, and it's taken me places I wouldn't wish on anybody. So after that, 1970, and I'm doing out there, doing what we do. Forget sports. Forget school. Forget my family. Forget everything. It's all about me now. It's about how much money I can put in my pockets. I'm rolling with some guys on a stoop in New York, and I'm making more money than my father. Doing what we do to get what we need. And I did that for a few years, and I'm like 21 years old, and I'm looking around. These guys are going to college. They're getting nice jobs, and I'm still on a stoop. You know, so I said, you know, I got to get out of here. I'm going to try a geographical change here. I joined the service, and I went to Berlin, Germany, and that's a wild place. You know, it's like the New York City of Europe. I was over there 30 months. I never came home on leave. I found this place in the Netherlands called Amsterdam, and I loved Amsterdam. The first time we took a train ride there, and I hung out with this kid, Liebel from Burbank, and he could speak the Deutsch, and Deutsch is similar to Dutch, and we were getting around, man. And I just, the first time we went was for 4 days, and I absolutely loved it. Heineken was one guilder, 50 cents for a liter. My first time there, on the second day, he goes, "Don't you find something peculiar?" I said, "What?" "We only saw one police officer in uniform. The rest were undercover. It's a major port in the North Sea. Everything that comes into Europe comes through Amsterdam." So I loved it. I always returned there. I took all my leave there, most of it. I went to a few other places. but I loved it there. So my time came done in the service. And I came back to the States. And I was home for 9 days. And my mother was an epileptic too. She had a seizure. She was on the landing in between the upstairs and the downstairs. My little sister wakes me up. It was like noon. And she said, "Something's wrong with Mommy." She was going into seizure after seizure. She was so drunk, she got her medication mixed up. And calling an ambulance, I rode the ambulance with her. They took a routine chest x-ray, and she had a tumor in her right lung as big as a softball. So she came home, went in as an outpatient, and she never woke up. And instead of me being there, for my family, I ran. And I ran hard. And I ran with a crew of guys, like five or six of us. And we weren't Boy Scouts. And I remember one day, one guy calls me up and says, "Hey, we're going to go down to the Hippodrome in downtown Buffalo. We're going to shoot some pool. You want to go?" And I was having a problem with a gambler. I was like, in my early 20s, betting $400 on a game. Like four or five games a night. And had a problem with a gambler, so I had a pistol in this holster. And so I take a ride with these guys, and he says, "We never asked each other the business. I knew it wasn't nothing that had any merit that he was doing." And I see him make an exchange, and all of a sudden the police came out of nowhere. And guns were drawn on us through the back window, and what he did was just sold some product to an undercover officer. And you know, at that time, when you go in front of judges, the probation's gone, the citations are gone, all those things are gone to get you out of, that's what I pray, right? "Oh, please, come on." You know, my father didn't come with the bail money. You know, he was done. That's one thing I found out when we run through, like a tornado through people's lives. When they're done with us. They're going to quit being enablers. So, this judge sent me to a place outside of Buffalo called Attica, and that was a rude awakening. I was a young guy, but I had a lot of homies in there, and there was so much tension in there. There's lines inside. You got to walk a certain way. No talking going when you eat or to yard. You come back in formation. They just did not play in that place. So I spent a few months there. I went to another place called Ellenville in the Catskills. And I worked in the visiting room there. Anyways, I was institutionalized. I knew how to get around. And I absolutely decided that I was going to change my life. I wasn't coming back to this prison. 40-foot walls, steel, concrete, 2,400 guys, treating her alcoholism and drug addictions with fear and anger. I was done with it. And I got out. And my brother was married to a girl. Her father had a construction company in a place called Washington, PA, outside of Pittsburgh. I lived in a little town called Prosperity. You blink your eyes, you're through the town. And that's what my brother does for me. He gives me a trailer, an acre and a half of land, a pickup truck, and a credit card, and a job. It took me 20 months to wipe my feet on that. He can put me anywhere in the world, and I'm going to get what I want. I don't care where I'm at. I'm just going to sniff it out. And I ruined that job and just lost everything. So my thinking, you know, my idea that someday, somehow, I'll be able to drink and drug like other normal people, I pursue that delusion to the gates of insanity or death. And that's what I did. I moved in with two nursing students. And I had no money. And we were doing what we do. And Flag Day, 1983, this is where the allergy took me, that phenomenon craving. I loaded a pistol, and I went over the counter at First Federal Savings and Loan in Pittsburgh. And I made an illegal withdrawal, about $18,000. And I got away with it for 6 days. And I spent most of that money. And the only thing I didn't know, where we were living, the houses were this far apart. The guy who lived next door was a police officer. He heard everything that was going on. I come home on a Saturday night, and I walked into my apartment. I thought I was in a police station. It was FBI, township, state police. Guy's got a folder. He goes, "You Jerry Faye?" I said, "No, I was just leaving." He didn't go for that one. So I go in front of this judge, and my brother was embarrassed. You know, he takes me down here, gives me a job, does everything within his capabilities to help me. And I just kicked it to the curb. The grace of God, kicked it to the curb. And the judge gave me 6 to 12 years. And me being a punk, tough guy, right? I told him that was a kidnapping. That's not a jail sentence. And I cried that night in the shower. I thought my life was over. So I go up. I go to Pittsburgh. So they call it the Wall. I don't know if anybody's ever been there, but if there's three blades of grass inside that place, there's a lot. The only thing you can see is the Skyway. It's right on the river, and it's in the drug section of Pittsburgh, the hill section. And wow. I was there 8 days, and there was two homicides. And I said, "What in the hell did I get myself into now?" And at that time, they give you a choice. Where do you want to go? They asked me where I wanted to go, and I had one friend that was in Dallas, State Correctional Institution in Dallas, so I went there. I went there, and I wanted to change my life. How many times did I want to do that? And I went to work as a teacher's aide in a school. I taught guys that couldn't read, couldn't add, trying to help them get their GED. And I did that for like 2 years. And the job opened as a Catholic chaplain's clerk. King's College is in Wilkes-Barre, and his priest, his job was in the prison there. So I was his clerk and his sacristan. Took care of his sacristy. I did all the clerk work for him. And I absolutely said in my mind that I'm going to change my life. I will change my life this time. I started going to college inside. Community college came in. When I got out of there, I was about 9 credits short of an associate's degree. I go to a state halfway house after 6 years in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And, you know, I'm going to do everything to change my life, man. And I got a great job. I got a job with the Steel Workers Union. I was tying steel at a water treatment plant they were building. I was making decent money. I got those credits. I got that diploma. And met a girl. I was the only one out of 9 kids that wasn't married. I must have 100 nieces and nephews. And I wasn't married. And I wanted to have kids, man. I felt my life was blown by me. I was in my early 30s. So I decided to get married. I married this girl from Mountaintop, PA. And she had her own problems. She was bulimic. I was an alcoholic addict. And we got the house on the hill, a couple of cars. I got elected local union officer. I was an usher in my church. All went well because I was on parole, see. That paper held me back. You know what I mean? I was getting a urine every week. Then they just stopped. But still, I thought, who knows when they're going to come with that cup, you know? So 2 days after I got out of parole, 2 days, I went out and did what we do. That's where the allergy takes me. One thing I can tell you about this illness, it wants you dead, but it'll settle for drunk or high. And when I pick up, I run hard. I like Jack Daniels and cocaine and heroin. I don't know what to tell you. That's what I like. And I don't smoke weed. It did nothing for me. Why take a bus when I get on a shuttle, right? So that's what I did. And within a few days, I was off and running, man. This is where the allergy takes me, that mental obsession, that physical allergy, that phenomenon of craving. I had two infants and a pregnant wife, and I walked away. I never went to work again. Business manager's looking for me to work. The allergy, man. Am I proud of that? No, but it's part of my story. But those three kids, after my son was born, I would get them on visits. They were my life, man. And I take them to little parks like this. And when I was sober, I could only have them when I'm sober. And just watching them run around got me high. And this allergy and obsession, this spiritual malady, took those kids out of my life till this day. But it's not my relationship with my family that keeps me sober. It's my relationship with an all-powerful God that keeps me sober. I'm available to be a father today. And I believe someday they're going to come to the door. So I had a girlfriend. And she was rich. She had about $25 million. And I didn't work for a few years. They called me for work, and she says, "You don't have to work." I would go on these elaborate trips with her to Las Vegas for 4 days, to Newport Beach for 4 days, and to Maui for 22 days. The first two times I did that, I can't remember nothing. I did what we do. That's what I did. And but I'll tell you what. Even though I love that girl and she loved me with all her heart, they've had enough. They've had enough. She'd tell me for 6 years I was with her, she'd say, "This is it. It's done." I said, "You said that all the time. You've been saying that for the last 5 years." Well, the last time she said it, she meant it. And I was out. And she got the Al-Anon. That's what happens. So, but, so there I was. A couple months before that, standing in the pool at the Grand Wali in Maui, drinking Triple Jacks and Sprite and doing what we do. And like 4 months later, I'm living under a bridge in Wilkes-Barre. I went through $20,000 in cash from a safe deposit box. I had $1,000 rolls and rubber bands. I went one day and it was nothing but rubber bands. And I was running hard, man, and I was homeless. Totaled a brand new truck, rolled it. I did some pretty crazy stuff, which I figured out. Anyways, this is what happens. I said I would never go back to prison. And this is like coming up on 1998. And I'm out there for a few short months. Not only did I get charged, I got 5 open cases. And they let me out on bail on every one on secure bail. 5. So I went down the line to Scranton, PA, and you think I fell off the face of the earth. I was out there like walking around doing what we do, and one day these cars, one pulls up behind me, one in front of me, and I was working for a buddy up there. I had to get out of the area, and these two guys in clothes came up, flashed their badges. Here comes that folder again with my picture. Is this you? I said, no, I was just leaving. Could you move your car? They wouldn't move, so they had me again. So, here. They take me to jail. I don't get out. When I do go to court, they offer me 11 and a half months to 23 months. 11 to 23 months with immediate work release. That is me. I'll take it. I'll take it, man. You know, I could do 11 and a half months on my head in the closet. That's me. So they do the deal. I go back. I'm happy, man. Woo! Right? Now, only the next time I go back in front of this judge, who's no longer a judge, he's in the federal penitentiary himself. You heard for that Kids for Cash thing. And I go in front of him. He doesn't give me 11 and a half to 23 months. He gives me 11 to 22 years. And I was having, like, mild chest discomfort, you know? And so there I go. I go to Camp Hill. And I go to this place called Housedale in the middle of the state, Clearfield County. And the first 2 years I was there, I was in the law library every day. I had a little money built up in annuity. I had a little money built up in a life insurance policy. And I started hitting the law books. By the grace of God, I found a case just like mine. U.S. versus Santabello. And exactly like mine. And it was reversed by the Supreme Court of the United States. And that's the biggest power in the land. The only ones that can reverse them are themselves. And I cashed in the annuity, get the money out of life insurance. I had this nun that I knew. She ran a Spanish. She was a missionary in El Salvador. She's my spiritual advisor today. She's 83. Me and my boy just went to have dinner with her. And I called her and I said, I need a good lawyer, someone who's not going to sell me out. I got one shot here. She gives me a name. Then I asked the priest, who's the Congregation of the Holy Cross, Notre Dame priest at that facility. I asked him for a name. They gave me the same name. So I call him up. He says, I need $7,500. I said, it's on its way. So that was like 2 years in. And after 5 years, 10 months, and 28 days, that case was finally reversed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And they sent a sanction notice to Judge D. And they said, if you don't release him and give him what he was supposed to get within 90 days, they're going to sanction you. And he didn't like me. I wasn't likable. That's what's something about the 12 steps. They make you lovable, don't they? At least people, you know. So this guy, 90 days, he brings me back on the 89th day. He let me sit, man, you know. So on the 89th day, I can still remember the gate going up in the Sally Port. I dove under that thing. I was running. I saw some guys after. They said, man, you ran so fast over the Pierce Street Bridge. Yeah, I was meeting someone who was giving me $1,000, the money I sent out. So here it was, July 13, 2004. I was going to change my life again. Got the obsession, though. You know, that thought that turns into an obsession. Forget life. Forget everything. I'm getting what I want to get out of here. Change my perception of reality so I can stay. I can be comfortable. I can be content. I'm not restless. I'm going to change my life. I go to the grotto. It's the All-Star game. All I was going to do was have a stromboli, watch the game, and that was it, my first night out, right? While I was in the joint, I became a personal trainer. I used to train the guys that were paralyzed, that were shot in the back. I used to do that. I worked in the gym there. I was never locked up. I was every count. I was on the out count. I'm institutionalized on how to get around those things. I'm sitting watching this game, and I'm sitting right in front of Labatt's tap. I'm swearing that tap is talking to me. And I get to Stromboli. After about 15 minutes, I order a beer. And you know, when I was away, I quit smoking for 5 years. I get that first beer, and next thing you know, I'm over up at the cigarette machine getting a pack of Camels. 20 minutes later, I'm down in the neighborhood, spent all the money peeking out windows for the rest of the night. But I was going to change my life. My own ideas. You know? So there I was again, man, and I was just so tired of it, man. When he resentenced me, he took away all that time, but he gave me a year's probation. And I'm nudging my lawyer, Joe, this isn't in what it's supposed to be. He goes, shut up, you're free today. So I was supposed to report to probation. The next day, I never went. Mailman's uniforms. I'm not going in there. So, I run to West Palm Beach, Florida with a girl. And I stayed down there for a while. She was from Boonville, New York. Her father had a logging company and her brothers had dairy farms. He got sick. We went back there. I worked on a dairy farm for a while. My first job in there was getting out of Bobcat and pushing all the crap out of the barn. That was beautiful. We lived on a dairy farm. When you got used to the smell, it was okay. So I'm down there about 3 months, and I'm still doing what I do at Farmer's Party, man. So I'm watching a Yankee game one night on the farm right here. I open the door. It's the Oneida County Sheriff's. The guy with the folder again. Is this you? No, man, you got the wrong farm. Come on. So there. They bring me all the way back to Wilkes-Barre. Here's the judge that just had to reverse the case. I got to go in front of him. The only thing that I did wrong was not report to probation. He made me do the whole year. Without question. They weren't done introducing the case, and he said, year. I said, okay, so I got to do a year. So, I'm institutionalized, right? So, I get two job status. I get immediate work release. So, I would leave the jail at 5 in the morning and come back at 3:30 in the morning. That's what I had to do. I worked, made windows during the day, then I went to a sports bar and worked there. That's what I did. So, no solution in my life except me. My idea is get me arrested. So, I do the year. I get out of there. I quit both jobs. Forget them. I had like $7,000 saved. I bought a car, got an apartment. I'm going to go out there and do what we do. 2 months, it was gone. Car, too. And there I was again, under the same bridge, with my own ideas. And I knew sooner or later something was going to happen, and I was going to be handcuffed and doing that shackle walk, you know what I mean, in front of a judge. So I was homeless 13 months out there. This time of year is fun. But when it's wintertime, it's like 10 below. You got 6 sleeping bags on you and 6 over you and a candle in the closet in the abandoned building. It's not much fun. So here I am. I got a long beard, long hair. I take a size 10 shoe. I got size 14 Timberlands on. An old overcoat. I'm walking. It's going with the shoes, right? I'm in downtown Wilkes-Barre trying to talk to these businesswomen thinking I'm cool. And they're like, woo! Right? Showered maybe once. The only time I changed my clothes, I went to the Salvation Army, got some clothes, left the ones that stood up, put on some clothes, and walked out. And, wow. So, there I was. I blacked out one time in all that time. And what I was doing on the Cross Valley Expressway in Wilkes-Barre at 1 in the morning, and I got hit by a car. And I wake up, I got brush burns on my face, I could feel pain in my knee, this explosion in the back of my head. This nurse is changing the IV, and I said, whoa, I'm at Wilkes-Barre General. She said, no, they life-flighted you, CMC in Scranton. I said, what? She said, the state police were here, they want to talk to you. And I said, oh, no, not the guy with the folder. You know what I mean? I didn't remember nothing, you know? It's scary. So I'm sitting around there, and I'm looking. My back of my head's killing me. My leg's killing me. brush burns out my face. And I said, yo, let's check this out. I'm out of here, man. You can't. You got to sign this AMA against my. Come here. So they didn't want me to go. She gives me, this is winter time, like February. She gives me the pajamas, the paper slippers, and they gave me a woman's coat, like five times smaller, with a little fur collar, right? I go prancing out of there, man. I'm going down Lackawanna Avenue. I'm hitting people for money the whole way. They're like, they see me here, you know? I got brush prints. I got like $40 when I get to the bus station. I get back to Wilkes-Barre. First thing I do is get a couple of pounders. I knock them down, malt liquor. That's where it took me, man, from drinking Jack Daniels. And when I got none, I'm drinking malt liquor. I'm getting out of here. And the only thing is I had this extreme pressure in the back of my head. I went to Wilkes-Barre General because I thought something was really wrong. And my balance was screwed up. My brain was bleeding. It bled for eight more days. You know, I could have died. That allergy takes me to places where my decision making is zero. So they let me out of there, and I remember the Murray Complex is abandoned, and I dropped out of a second floor window, and I tore ligaments in my knee, and I was walking down Pennsylvania Boulevard, and there's a Curry Donuts. I look in the window, and I didn't know who the hell that guy was, long hair, beard. I said, I don't know who this guy is, man. You know, and I said a simple prayer. I was open and frank. I wasn't angry. I said, either do something with me or take me. Take me, man. Take me out of here. Next day, I ended up in rehab. It's April 2nd, 2007. And for some reason, I believe what they told me there. They told me you don't have to feel the way you're feeling. You don't have to live the way you're living. If you get to a loving God in that second step, in that second tradition. I said, I hope he's loving, man, because I'm no Boy Scout here. You know, I would do just about anything when I got there. And I just saw the power working in them. Like, you know, Bill sitting across and maybe at the kitchen table. I saw the power in their life. So I was going to give it a shot. The closer I got to that release from that rehab, the scareder I got. And they sent me to a sober house that took me with no money in Wilkes-Barre. And I can still remember being 11 months sober, on my knees, in tears, asking God, please, I don't want to use. I knew I was going to use. I had no solution. I had nothing. I was going to meetings, that's it. But there was one, I read the big book three times by myself. I knew nothing. Could apply nothing to my life. But there was one thing in there. It was a 12-step promise, which I love. And I just loved it. And my life is terrible. I was making $7 an hour bagging cups in Maui Cup, you know, Burger King cups, Dunkin' Donut cups, you know. The woman I worked for was like 6'3 with tattoos and could tell me where to go. And I hated it. I hated everybody in AA. I was restless, irritable, and discontent in the meetings. I wanted to strangle her, punch him in the face. I don't care. I'm hitting you with the podium, too. I was so angry, and it was all inner turmoil. I had no solution, no God, no nothing. And there was one promise that said, you and a new man must walk day by day the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we'll see the things we placed in God's hands were better than anything we could have ever planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power. You'll presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And my circumstances suck, man. It was terrible. And about 3 or 4 days later, a jail guard I knew called me on the phone. He said, Jerry, are you done drinking and drugging? I hear you're going to AA. I said, yeah, I'm done. He said, are you done with the handcuffs? I said, yeah, I'm done. I need help, man. And he goes, go see this guy down on Wyoming Avenue, Strand. I walked in there as a business agent for a union. I went from making $7 an hour to making $28 an hour, just like that. And that was from a jail guard who I didn't even like. That was a loving God. Because of my faith, I stayed within His grace. That's all I can tell you. So, you know, some remarkable things have happened to me. From what, Jerry? What remarkable? From trusting God, keeping my side of the street clean, and helping others. I absolutely believe we're divinely made by this powerful, loving Creator to help each other, but I don't see it in AA. I just don't see it. I have a passion for it. So at a couple years sober, guy asked me to speak to Salvation Army, and he said, this is your commitment. With that commitment, I made another commitment. They're a big book workshop. I got a big book workshop going to another men's rehab. Then another state, county sober house. I had another workshop my buddy Joey did with me. I found that the principles within those pages of 30 and 103, I applied those principles to my life. My life got better. You know, what principles? Honesty, acceptance, compassion, service. I apply those in my life. Bill says, he gives you three things to do, and we agnostics, if you do, you will, with this attitude, you shall not fail. Sweep away prejudice. He's talking about God, any kind of prejudice you have about God. Sweep that away. Think honestly. Got to get honest, right? And search diligently within yourself. He's talking about finding God. And I found when I surrendered, I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. That same place I conceded to that, I found God. My heart and soul. And life hasn't changed. Life changed immensely. 180 degree turn. Here I was 6 years ago, homeless. Now I own 4 houses. I have my own lot. 2 of them are sober houses. I'm blessed. From what, Jerry? Trusting God and helping others. It's the only logical explanation I have for you. That's what I've done differently in my life. I trust God and I help others, and my life changed. I can't tell you how powerful God is or define Him, but I can tell you what He is not. He's not a junkie with his needle in his arm. He's not world hunger. He's not a human race that instills diseases upon each other. He's not stealing oil from a company. He's not there, man. That's man. God's right here, right now, in this room. It's powerful stuff for me. But this is what happened to me, too. I ended up working with the bricklayers. I was a mason tender, man, in expedited production. I got tired of doing that. And that priest I mentioned from King's College, the day I got sentenced with that last time, he died that day. But there was a seminarian I met in the 80s. His name was Tom. And he was the president of King's College, so I went and saw him. I told him I had an associate's degree. I'd like to do something else with my life. I was a couple years sober. And he said, well, go see this guy, vice president of student affairs. I go see him. 2 days later, I get a letter saying I got a scholarship to King's, half a scholarship. I'm saying, man, I'm like 56 years old. Come on. Day later, another one comes for $1,500. I'm gone. So I went. And I graduated in December with a bachelor's degree in sociology and a minor in psychology. Never in my life did I think I'd be there. Came from a stoop in New York and under a bridge in Wilkes-Barre. I was working in a rehab, men's rehab in Scranton. I took another job at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center with my buddy Jimmy, and I didn't like the shift. So this is where my faith is today. I did not come this far to do nothing. So what am I going to do? Trust God and help others. And it's his schedule, not mine, right? So that's what I'm going to do. So I got to wait for him. And when it comes, it'll come. So here's the thing, man. I have a daughter. And she's a senior at UConn. She graduated this year. And this is like 2 years ago. And she writes me a letter. I have a son, 6'5". He's 16, 17. He doesn't even know who I am. Doesn't even know who I am. And my daughter, out of the blue, writes me this letter. She's a music major, opera singer. This is what she writes me. Dear Daddy, I don't know where to begin. Let's just say that last night I was singing in my choral concert here at UConn, and something happened to me during the performance of Mozart's Vespers during a movement called Levante Domininam. I thought of you, and I thought, even though I really don't know you and everything that happened in the past, I still love you more than I can ever say. That's God's ever more. And I know someday they'll come back, and I want to be sober that day. And the only way I know how to do it is to trust God, keep my side of the street clean, and help others. That's all I can tell you. I would like to leave you with a couple of things. Is there any newcomers in the room? Anybody under 90 days? A couple? I'm going to tell you a story, what happened to me as a newcomer. But first, I'd like to leave you with this. This whole program is about God and helping another human being. I go to these meetings, 11-step meetings, and they're talking about prayer and meditation. But I don't hear about what it's really about, what Bill Wilson was talking about. Bill get them drunk at 6 a.m. at noon. They're helping other drunks through the door. Do you know that? So here it is. Here's Bill Wilson. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We only know a little. He only knows a little bit of what I know. I don't know much. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask Him in your morning meditation. That's what prayer and meditation is about. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do for the next sick man. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But you possibly can't transmit something you don't have. See that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That is the great fact for us. God and another human being picking them up and helping them. I can't believe that I was considered. I'm a refell. I'm a repeat felony offender. And these guys considered me. And my life has changed dramatically. Without a doubt in my mind, every fiber, if they got me in a wheelchair, I'm going to try to help another human being in this program. Because I know that darkness is creating your soul. So here, what else we got to do? Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Not the contemporary AA. Fellowship of the Spirit. That's where I belong. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. Trudge means labor. That's not what he's meaning. He's meaning with a purpose. Trudge that road with a purpose. What's your primary purpose? To stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety, right? That's what he's talking about there. I'll tell you what, man. I went to the Cayman Islands to a roundup down there a couple months ago. I didn't have the money, but a guy knew a guy that had a sober house. I stayed at the sober house. I had a fellowship with them guys. And I got the chance. My sponsor was the host. And I got a chance to sit down and have lunch with Bob Darrow for a couple hours. And he told me, without a doubt, if you stay committed to your home group and stay sponsorable, you'll stay sober. I said, how do you know that, Bob? He said, well, I'll tell you what. I travel this world 45 times out of the year. I speak all over the world. And Clancy told him he can only miss his home group 3 times. So he had to leave the Cayman Islands to go to Connect the Dots in Las Vegas to go to that home group. Because he already missed his 3. I have to stay sponsible, man. I have to check my thinking with another human being. Because Bill said, therefore, the main problem, the alcoholic's in his mind. But I know this. It's gotten better. The spiritual malady is overcome, recover mentally and physically. What's Bill talking about? He's talking about the mental obsession and the physical allergy is going to be gone as long as I don't put it in me and set it off. You know, I'm a real alcoholic addict. I know what I am, man. I know what I am. Bill tells you real easily. He says if you can recover on a non-spiritual basis is determined on the extent that you've lost your power and choice of drink. I've lost my power of choice once I put it in me. I had to get to a God of my understanding. I got to a powerful God. So, this is what I want to tell you what happened to me as a newcomer, man. I was about 6 months sober, and I had no car yet. And I was waiting at the bus. And you ever see a little old lady about 70? She got the bobby pins tight to her head. She's got a shopping bag, and she's coming. She doesn't look happy. And I'm standing there, and I'm saying, they told me, you know, if I just, even a good morning is helping others. So I say, good morning, man. She went, So I'm like moving over. The bus pulls up, door kicks open. I said, after you, man. I get on a bus, man. I sit down behind a bus driver. She steps up on the first step. She goes like this. They never say a word. He goes like this. She goes like this. He goes like this. She goes like this. He goes like this. She turns around. She does this. He closes the door and she's going like this. Right? We're moving on. I'm like up looking, right? And then there's the other old lady over here. She's looking at this lady. The little lady goes, that's some of the most obscene things I ever saw. Bus driver hit the brakes. He said, that lady was a deaf mute. She said to me, you're going uptown? I said, no, I'm going downtown. You're making many stops along the way? No, I'm going straight through. You're going by the dairy? No, I'm going by the ballpark. Shit, I'm on the wrong bus. So what was all this? Keep coming back. Yeah.